Welcome to Did You See That? Brought to you by BetEase. Here are your hosts, Mark Adam and Braden Augustine.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm here with Adam.
And yep. And our guest, Willie Plouffe.
Yes. Thanks, Samuel, boys.
Yeah. And so Willie's on the Fourth Line Hockey Show. It's on Shaw, as well as you can find a lot of the episodes on YouTube. So check that out. And we're going to get to hockey right away. But first, we just got to discuss the NBA really quickly, because the Cavs absolutely manhandled the Raptors, swept them in four again, 2 years in a row. Then they walked into a Boston team that just knocked them right back on their butt.
Yeah, that was, I guess, slightly worrying, considering we expected the Cavs to win.
Well, but I mean, I think...
It is one game.
I do think the Cavs will come out on top of the series, but Boston looks dangerous, and they're defending LeBron properly. Like, it isn't one guy defending LeBron that held him down. Everybody took a turn blocking shots, intercepting passes, everything like that. So I think going forward, that's what we look for in that Boston series, to see what's going to happen there. Because if Boston can take down the Cavs, what an upset that would be. Because, and Willie, you don't know, but at the start of the playoffs last year, I called Cavs Warriors in the finals this year.
Wow, did you have some bet on that? Some big going on?
I put a couple bucks on it, but
there you go.
Just with a buddy, so it's not like a Vegas thing. I'm there sitting on some nugget. But I mean, even if I had placed the bet in Vegas, it probably wouldn't have been a lot of money on the odds,
right?
Because they met already three times in a row. This is going to be four if they both come out victorious in their series. But I'm still holding on to that. Like, if they end up in the series, I will have called it more than a year prior.
That's a huge touchdown. That's a great call.
Yeah, there you go.
But it also speaks to the non-parity in the NBA, which we talked about on a previous episode as well. Not so much evident in the NHL, but with Vegas doing as well as there.
If you want to make money on betting, that's where you do it. Bet on Vegas.
Yeah, right?
Although you would have never known, or at least most people would have never known, that Vegas would be doing as well as they are.
I think the stats, the odds were huge at the beginning of the year.
Oh, I know. Probably insane.
You put down $100, you hit a big home run.
That's nuts. Like, a buddy of mine, actually, we were doing another sports show at the time, and he actually said at the start of the season, here's my bold prediction of the year: Vegas Golden Knights win the Stanley Cup. And I'm like, you're crazy. You're crazy.
Well, everyone that said that was crazy.
Like, I believed that they could potentially make the playoffs because of the players they picked, the way, like, George McPhee is a back office wizard. Like, the guy had so many backdoor deals, it was insane. But, like, But then you go back over to the NBA real quick, and then you have these two teams that are obviously going to run over everyone unless something drastic changes. You know, the Rockets could upset the Warriors. The Celtics could upset the Cavs. That's it. That's the only maybes.
Yeah.
Right? Everything else is just a collision course between the Cavs and the Warriors.
I think there's only one team, which is the Warriors, that are, like, actually designed to beat everyone, because they just have so many good players. Whereas the Cavs, it's just LeBron.
Well, like, it's the LeBron show,
but he's a generation talent.
Well, so last year they had
Kyrie Irving
and Love, and they had weapons. Like, it wasn't just LeBron last year.
And then this year, now Kyrie's gone, and Kevin Love isn't playing as well as he did last
year. Yeah, Kevin Love is not on his game.
So now it's the LeBron show.
It for sure is. But, I mean, it's always the LeBron show in some way.
That's true.
Like, it's super funny to think that it doesn't matter what position LeBron plays on the court, he will be the best player at that position in the building. Mm-hmm. It does not matter what position he plays. There's other sports that isn't like that. There's no hockey player who could be the best defenseman and the best centerman. There's nobody. But LeBron is that, like you said, generational talent where it doesn't matter what position he plays, he's just going to dominate it.
Yeah, well, I think basketball, it has a little bit less emphasis on playing a specific position. Like, in hockey, it's like, if you're a goalie, you're a goalie. If you're a defenseman, you're a defenseman, and you've gained those skills to play that position. Whereas in basketball, LeBron he can be a dominant point guard because he's so big and so agile. He can be a shooting guard because he can shoot. He can be a center because he's big. Like, he has all the different attributes.
I think he's officially listed as a small forward.
Yeah.
Like, so he's not even like the power forward. Like, It's just funny. Like, just that it doesn't matter what position. It doesn't – his position list doesn't matter. He's going to be the best at that position. Nobody can outplay him in that position. It's mental. But anyway, so we'll look forward to see if LeBron can bounce back from that thrashing he took from the Celtics and in game two, which I believe happens this evening. As we record this, by the way, it is May 15th.
Yes, this evening.
So, yeah, we're in the morning of May 15th. So let's get on to why we asked our guest on, which is hockey. So Willie Plouffe from the Fourth Line Hockey Show, what's your take on the current situation? There's four teams left. If you had to pick one coming out of each side, which would you pick first?
Well, you know, obviously us guys in Winnipeg, I'm going with Winnipeg.
Oh, you're wearing a Jets hat.
And I'm wearing a Jets hat. And and you're looking at Winnipeg and Las Vegas, they're pretty well, very comparable squad together. And both teams there, whoever comes out there is winning the cup. I know OV's pushing hard in Washington and how he's behaving and what's going on with his team. We have a very good friend of ours who's playing with Washington, Madison Bowie, Winnipeg boy. He's like the seventh D-man, but he's there, right?
Yeah.
I'm looking towards Winnipeg because, you know, we lost last night, but we're coming back on Wednesday, and the way it rolls is, you know, the team's been working. We lose one, we come back hard. They're not going to lose two more. You had to give up one to Vegas. I'm okay with giving up one yesterday. I think we're going forward. I think Washington's coming out of over. They're going to four straight Tampa.
Yeah, and Hellebuck hasn't lost two games in a row.
Right.
That's another stat there too. So there's a lot of good things going on for the Jets right now, even though they did kind of not show up yesterday. I think they had like 5 minutes of sustained good play, and then they got scored on.
Yeah,
and it was like, oh, all right, well, that's it. Like,
the puck turnovers were unbelievable.
It was ridiculous, and in terrible spots. Like, center of the ice, everyone's the changing, and the puck isn't even off Connor's stick. Everybody's watching him get stick checked. And they're still headed to the bench. It's just poor decision making last night.
Even on his end, you know, I love that kid, but you know what? You can't dangle it right at the red line. Yeah. You got to make that, carry the puck over. Let's dump it in and get that change.
Yeah, especially when you know it's the end of your shift. Get it deep. Get the hell off. Yeah. Right.
100%.
They were saying last night, the commentary team, that obviously a player has to be aware, but they were also saying that it was partly Paul Maurice's fault, and the reason for that was. You don't initiate a line change until the puck is already dumped in. So he shouldn't be calling his players to the bench while the puck is still just leaving their own zone, right? It should already be in a space where you're safe.
I would argue that it's up to the players who are watching this happen to make that call.
Well, of course.
Like, listen, as soon as that puck is released, just because, like, you're not a dog. You don't come over just because you get called. Right, you're a very smart, intelligent hockey player, or you wouldn't be in the conference finals, right?
Of course.
You wouldn't be playing for a team that's there.
Like you're saying, these guys have been playing elite hockey since they've been probably 13 years old. They know when to change, when not to change. Especially at that high level, they know when to hop on and, you know, to stay on. That puck, at that time, the boys are changing. I think they should have held back a bit. They should have seen the play going on and all of them. But, you know, you're caught up. You're caught up in the situation. You're jacked up, and you wanted what?
I guess what bothered me about it was when you watch the replay, you see every single one of their eyes is on Connor, watching him not have control of the puck, and they were still heading to the bench.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I guess faith in your teammates, but come on, guys. Well,
but having faith in your teammate doesn't mean leaving them out to dry.
Like, well, yeah.
Like there's like a fine line.
And
there.
Hellebuck got hung out to dry twice.
Definitely. Yeah. Let's talk about a little about Ehlers. Do you guys think that he has there's a silent injury going on? Because he's lighting
been
up.
Super quiet.
Super quiet.
And I picked him in my playoff pool, so I had faith going in, you know, that he was going to produce, right? And Line A was not at all around for a while, and then all of a sudden he like woke up. But Ehlers, he's moving
either
slow.
Hurt or I'm saying intimidated. You know what? Yeah. Maybe he's scared, you know, because the game, he's a fast player, but it's stepped up to the next level now, and guys are stepping up, and they will take your head off if they have a chance to take your head off. I think he's backing off a little bit, not really pushing it.
There were a couple of times he took off there in not yesterday's game, but Sunday night's match, where he all of a sudden got up to speed in a hurry like he does, and it was like, oh, is he going to wake up now? And he had one go off the post behind.
Yeah. Yeah,
Fleury, and he looked great doing it, and then
Fleury got saved three times.
Yeah,
hitting the post.
By the post. But I don't see Mlaska guys, right? They hit the pipe a couple times.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I think that was the most posts I've seen in one game between the two teams. Like, it was insane.
The one thing we haven't seen from Ehlers is during the regular season, you would see he'd have a little bit of open space, and then he would kind of hit that second stride, and then he would just take off.
Yeah.
It seems like it's just a more consistent skating versus just all of a sudden he just takes off and just blows by people. So if it is an injury, I would say it's probably a lower body injury.
I see a groin, you know.
Something like that, exactly.
Yeah.
But I think
he's
you're
not
right
getting up to speed
intimidated.
The same way. He's not getting up to speed, like, at the same, like,
he usually doesn't get to that, like, second level where it's, like, he's just faster than everybody. Like,
yeah,
it's just, like, he's fast, but he's not that kind of a step up from everyone else like he was in the regular season.
And when the defensemen get the puck in the back, like, what he's normally doing is scooping back behind to take that pass so that he can get up to speed. Mm-hmm. He comes out of turns faster than he went into them. Like, that's how he accelerates.
Yeah.
And that's not how a lot of players work. So he catches a lot of defensemen on the other team off balance by all of a sudden he's faster than he went into the turn. That's not normal. So but you're not seeing him do those like curved swoops to pick up the puck. I think it's because he doesn't want to cut across the ice.
I think he's timid coming across.
He doesn't want his head taken off.
He knows what's going on, and Vegas plays that, you know, that trap, that 2-1-2, and they come at you hard. I think they're coming against – he knows that. And if you watch yesterday's game and you really focus on him, he's not pulling away like he had that time and space to do it before. Now he's done. I'm not saying he's done. He's a great player, but I think he's intimidated because Vegas has changed the way they play against our attack. Because they're both speedy teams.
Yeah, they're trying to stand us up.
Stands up the blue line, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Catch him.
Yeah.
And I think he's very aware of that. And I think he turned around. He just needs one. He needs a pot of goal. Get that speed going, and I think, you know what, he'll be okay. And we haven't started yet. Their boys are really – they're getting jacked.
And I'd really like him to score a couple goals because I did pick him in my pool. But I mean, beyond that, like, if he gets a goal, maybe two, like Connor did, all of a sudden Connor's everywhere all the time, right? So it just took that little bit of, like, breaking that seal, and there you go. Now you can actually just, okay, calm down. You got a goal. It's over. Stop putting so much pressure on yourself and just play the game.
Being snake bit, right? As soon as he gets all that you know, that curse they got or whatever, how they're feeling, put one in, a TSN turning point. It could be any time right there. You get one, you're going forward, right? And everything changes over for you very fast, very quick. And you being involved in a lot of hockey, that's what happens. Or even base winner, you make good catch, good save. Things turn around. Team picks up a good hit. Good scrap that unfortunately we got away from, but you know, things happen.
Fourth line hockey show. You're also a owner in the fourth line
pub and grill,
which right. I was fortunate enough to watch the Jets game 7 at, and it was I'll tell you,
fun.
It was a good time. I really like that place, but the walls there are lined with pictures of hockey fights, fourth liners. Right,
yep.
which was awesome to me. Looking at all these pictures of like fights I've seen, I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot that guy fought that guy. And
well, we had a couple, like we know a lot of, you know, guys from the NHL alumni come by and have a drink and have you know, something to eat, and that, and you sit there and you know, Wayne Babbage, Dave Babbage, Abby McDonald all come in, Gilly, a lot of guys coming in. Mike Keane was over the other day, and they look at the walls and they say, oh, I fought him, or I was involved in a situation with him,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
and it's pretty cool.
That guy punched me in the face one time.
That guy knocked me out. We treat it like a museum, and you know, it's
cool.
We wanted a hockey museum kind of pub style.
And and I think you're really getting there, because when you walk into that back room and you see that wall, there's a wall that says the history of fighting in hockey, and it has like some detailed information there. So it is that kind of like museum-y feel, but then you also can drink, which I like.
You can have a couple of points. You know, getting back to the Vegas and Winnipeg series, how great is it to see two Winnipeg boys playing on Vegas, EK and then Reeves? How good is that, you know, pushing it forward for, you know, hockey in Winnipeg, you know?
Yeah, although Eakin said some not so nice things about Winnipeg the other day.
Did he? I didn't hear that. Was he giving some shots?
I basically said that he didn't give two flying bleeps about. Yeah. I don't know what the direct quote was, but it was something to the effect that he did not care for Winnipeg.
Well, really, you know, because like when Cody comes home and works out at the Lake of the Woods, or where I seen him at the different spots working out when we were coaching young kids, he would come in the room and talk to the guys. So he was pretty solid.
Oh yeah, he loves hockey. He's good at it. He's a guy you want helping the kids, but it was just, it was a weird thing for this proud, quote-unquote, proud Winnipeg boy to
see. Yeah, bizarre.
That's probably more of like a, like, I play on Vegas, so I need to support Vegas.
Yeah,
like, I'm sure if you talk to him in a one-on-one situation, he's not going to say, like, F Winnipeg, I hate that stupid city, blah. Like,
it's, yeah, when the playoffs are done,
it's like a playoff hockey thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I've had the, being a bartender in town for, you know, since I got here, I've actually had the pleasure of serving Cody Eakin a couple of times. So, like, I've seen the guy. He does come back to town when he can, and
yeah.
You know, he takes the whole family out. Like, he's you know, he's got his roots here, obviously. Mm. So for him to say that was just a little
threw you off. Yeah, threw you a curveball. What's going on?
Yeah,
maybe you should have popped him out and said things going on.
I'm not from Winnipeg. I'm not gonna jump to Winnipeg's rescue or anything.
I'm just kidding. Yeah,
but that's and that's some fourth line shit right there.
Yeah, shake and bake. Let's get it done. then you're looking at RD compared to Vegas D, they're pretty, like, there's some good hockey there. Like,
absolutely. Like, there's
top players playing top shelf hockey.
Yeah, I think the big thing with them is nobody expected, just based on names, because everybody knows that there's a little bit of name value. So it's like people like Ovechkin more than they like this player because he has a bigger name. Well, there's not really anybody on Vegas that has a name like that. But they all work as a team. So it's like you expect Winnipeg, oh, they're better because they have these players. Well, Vegas doesn't really have anyone that I know of. Turns out, doesn't make a difference.
Neil,
anyways. Right?
That would be Neil.
Either James Neal or Jonathan Marchessault.
Yeah,
it's either.
There was I'm trying to find the link. Oh, just while we're on the subject of the Jets, before we start talking about Washington and Tampa Bay, what's your take on the Winnipeg Rifles president resigns over PK Subban post on Facebook? Did you read about that?
No, I have not.
So Todd Wilson.
Yeah.
Posted a picture of one of the, I don't know if it was a,
it's like one of those
vendors.
Server,
yeah, one of the beer vendors at the MTS Center during game one of the the Vegas series.
Yeah.
He posted a picture of this guy who happened to be black, and his caption was, "Two nights ago he was in game seven, tonight PK Subban is selling me beer."
Oh, that's a stupid comment.
Yeah, I know, right?
Right?
Yeah, like
you
seriously.
You have to know better than that.
So he ended up, then it's Todd Wilson, he resigned.
Winnipeg
Rifles football.
Well, yeah,
people were demanding it. It was he had no choice. Like,
yeah, that was
who makes a comment like that?
Well, I know it was like, stupid. He was trying to be funny. Checked, like Winnipeg got rid of him, and now he's back in Winnipeg. But like, you can't in today's day and age, you can't get anywhere near.
Yeah, I got zero tolerance for that kind of.
Yeah, it's
stuff
like that's
on.
Not.
But like, and especially like a person in that, like, it's bad enough that it was said, but the fact that he's a prominent Winnipeg figure looks bad on the Rifles, the city.
Yeah.
There was a lot of apologies made on his behalf.
Well, and rightfully so, right? He got caught up in it, and he, you know what? Yeah. You got to be smarter than that, and I'm not saying he is a very smart, intelligent man, and a good guy, but
That was not a very smart thing to do.
A huge brain fart, right?
Yeah, and his direct quote was a poor attempt at humor.
Yeah,
which I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah. It was definitely a poor attempt at humor.
If you really look into it, you can see where he's meant, like trying to be funny, but as a president of an organization, you gotta know better. Like, it's not like he's never dealt with public relations before.
Right.
Like, you're a president of a club. You got to know that something like that is just not tolerable. And, like, I'm sure he would say the same thing to a player if they said something like that. So.
Yeah, it's like.
100%.
Yeah, you got to think of it. You got to think of it like.
He's a role model. He's running the whole program.
Oh, exactly.
Right? And Winnipeg Rifles, they're youth. So, like, they're still.
Exactly. Which is even worse.
You know, moldable minds, which is not. It's not something you want ingrained in the culture there.
Yeah.
So, and that was just.
For sure.
Just a
and he's
major
got that,
brain fart.
Yeah, and he's got that position because he is a decent person and gone further, right, with youth and working hard. And like you say, and like we both says, it's a brain fart. It's a mistake, and he's owning it, which is number one.
Yeah, and he also said that he hopes that it doesn't come back, and that joke is not representative of any of the the organizations for which he volunteers,
right.
All that kind of thing. So he did a little bit of backpedaling on it, but obviously, like, I think after. Because who knows? We've all done some silly things when we're like, we're drunk, and we're like, that's funny, but that's. you know, once you put it on social media, you really have to, especially if you're a public figure, you have to watch yourself.
Just really have to check yourself when you're a figure like that. Like, you really have to, like, double check everything, double read everything, really make sure that it's not, like talk to somebody else, ask them, is this appropriate? Like, you got to know better than
that. We were doing the show in Red Deer. We talked earlier about it. And we had someone on the show, one of the employees, and he was a manager at the time. Mm. I won't say where we're at, but, you know, what the servers were wearing were pretty discreet uniforms. And my co-host was talking about his hiring practice. And the poor guy went off record huge as we were taping. And lucky we weren't live, because someone would have been fired, someone could have been sued. It was like, wow.
Jeez.
You know, he had to keep himself in check, but he lost it, right? And then we had, you know, we cut it all out. But we talked to him later, like, you know, hey, you need to really think about it. You can't talk like that.
I can imagine the things that were said.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. And for us guys to say, whoa, back up, it's pretty heavy.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. Oh, wow. Anyway, so let's move on. I want to talk about the Washington-Tampa series because Ovechkin has worn a lot of the failure of Washington over the last however many years. This is finally...
He's been the whipping boy.
Yeah.
That way.
Yeah, since, that's a good call.
Since the first time that they met the Penguins in the playoffs in 2009 to now, they've met... This was the fourth time they'd met. Finally, they get by Crosby. They shake that curse. But before that happened, you could tell Ovi had a different energy in this whole playoff so far. And last night... No different. He came out of the gate ready to just crush some people. He was throwing hits. He's making passes. He's making moves. He's doing everything that he possibly can to shake everything up. Like, what's he doing different this year?
Well, you know, I believe that he's gone through his past, and like you say, he's carried a lot of the blame for it. Mm-hmm. And this year, he's taken on himself, especially getting that pass, that first series. Like, you know what? We have a chance, and I'm taking my team to the next level. And I'm going to be, like, you know, the hero of the squad. I'm representing all Washington. I'm going hard. My attitude, I've had opportunities, but, you know, it was Crosby, Ovi, Crosby, Ovi, back and forth, back and forth. Now he's bumped off Crosby, and he's stepping up one game harder. I just think his confidence, he's always confident, but he's finishing his checks harder. He's skating harder. He's the cock of the walk, and he's feeling like a champ. And I think... obviously, I'm going for Winnipeg. Like, I want Winnipeg to beat Vegas and win the Cup. But Washington's playing, like, Ovi's leading his team and playing a whole new level of hockey right now. Four straight. I'm calling that, baby. Four straight.
Four straight? Okay.
Four straight.
I mean, I don't know about four straight. I think if Tampa Bay wakes up from whatever sleep they're having, I think they could make a game of – they could at least take one. But they've not played their game. They've looked off. I think this series so far has been as much about Ovi and the Caps playing well as it has been about like Tampa Bay really not playing well. They're not finishing checks. There's a lot of really rough play. And I don't mean rough like coming together like bang bang. I mean like just like
turnovers,
like awkward,
not,
just
uncomfortable.
Yeah, like not if clean. I think I can do it better than you, and you're at that level, something is wrong here.
Well, you know, if you look and you asked me earlier there about what I'm seeing, I'm seeing the whole Washington Capitals team having fun. They're joking, they're laughing. Facebook's coming up with different things. You know, there's tweets going on. Whatever. These guys are having a good time, and that when you're relaxed, you push to the next level. You have fun at your job, and these guys are really having fun.
Case in point, Dustin Byfuglien. Yeah. Last year, he did not look like he was having any fun. Even the first, probably 10 games of this year, he did not look like he was having any fun. And then, I don't know what changed, but like, and I was in the press box for a lot of the games at the start of the year, and I watched the progression of him, and something clicked one day, and he just showed up, and he was smiling and laughing. And do you remember when they made him? He had a leg injury, and I was like, "Is he really injured?"
Yeah.
And there was all that controversy, but he came back, and he was just on fire. And he's just ever since he's been smiling, joking, laughing, and he's been playing like a man possessed. And I think it's sort of the same thing as Washington, what you're talking about.
All the way, you know, when those guys start feeling like that, and they get the jump, they're dancing, they're having fun on the ice, they're laughing. Obviously, it's going their way right now, but it's like a virus. It gets picked up by everybody, and just let it run. let it go forward, and everyone's hopping on board, and that's what's going on with Washington right now. When I look at them, you watch Holy Net, like, look at the guys, and he's in the pipes, and he's having fun, he's sticking guys, joking. Defensemen are, it's all about having fun. Like, they're little guys back in the grassroots of hockey and playing for big money, having fun.
Yeah, and it's super great to watch. And I think it helps, too, with Winnipeg that they haven't lost two in a row.
Right.
Right? Like, if you lose two in a row, you can lose that, like, fun momentum.
Right.
Because they've got this, like, attitude momentum going forward. It's like, we lost one, we can shake it off. You start losing two, maybe three in a row, then you're like, then are you still having fun?
Then
the stress levels come up.
Yeah, you're like, it's like, your mind starts playing games on you, right? That, you know, the part of the sport is the psychological big time, right? You start thinking things negative, you know, you're going to be going back instead of going forward.
Exactly. And somebody come into the room and say, hey, we're not paying you to lose.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, right, this is a job, I'm not having fun anymore, right? Like, I can't, you know what I mean? Then you get back into
that's like probably one of the worst things a coach can do is come in and like, you better win. It's like, that's not.
The best way is come in and throw down 100 grand each player. Here we go. Get to the next level. There it is.
Exactly.
That's I like motivation. That idea, but that's a business practice that we're not going to find.
I don't know if the NHL is like that. I think the thing with Washington is, and people have been talking about it all year, is they finally have lost that expectation from everyone. Oh, like, oh, he's going to win it this year, and Washington's going to go far. They're the best team in the league. They won the President's Trophy, all these things, right? For all these years, they had all this pressure of, you better be a good team because you've shown it in the regular season that you can beat everyone.
Right? Yeah. How many times did they win the President's Trophy?
Like,
under Ovi?
That's
three?
A curse.
Three
yeah,
or something?
Yeah, they had too many.
But they finally get the year where, well, Tampa's really good, and, oh, the Leafs are finally pretty good, and the Boston Bruins are good, and all these things. So it's finally not a spotlight on Washington, and they've thrived compared to previous years where it's been losing the first round, losing the second round, never make the conference finals. Finally, they make the conference finals, and it's the year where there's not the expectation for them to go there.
But that comes back to like, now is the most, like, this era is the most parity of any time in the NHL, in the history of the NHL. You have an expansion team who's in the conference final.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like today, well, with this many teams in the league, like, this isn't 1920.
It's actually shocking that where they are, and you look at.
But it isn't based on who they have on their team.
That's right.
Well, I think the
great good players who've been put aside and got the second opportunity, second chance to show what they have. They're all talented. Every one of the guys in the NHL are talented players. If you scale those guys, they're good players. AHL guys, they're all good. If you played some pro hockey, you're a good player.
Yeah.
Now the guys in Vegas have been pushed aside a little bit, forgot about. It's a whole new
McCrimmon's James Neal's kind of on his way out of
the league. McCrimmon's made these guys feel like a champ. He's come in there in the opposite, right, and said, hey, we know you're players. We know you're good.
Well, and,
let's go get
it. I think it comes back to George McPhee. George McPhee went out of his way to get those players he had.
Yeah.
He picked up these defensemen all over the place, and everybody's like, what are you going to do? And we talked about this on another podcast, how he used them as money, right, which is fine. But he wanted specific players on his team, and he went out and he got them. And, that, when you're chosen specifically by a guy, doesn't that give you confidence? Like, wow, like, this guy has faith in me. I'm going to do what I can. And at the start of the year, zero expectations. You talk about having fun. Those guys, 9-0 at the start of the year, they're having fun.
Yeah. Oh.
Right?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, wow. That's
and you're
that
in Vegas.
Is my,
and you're, you know, the, it's
and like you're in Vegas.
It's kind of like a huge, it's a show. It's an event. It's not just a game. It's a whole put together of, you know what, you're a champ. Like, people are knowing you now. They're pushing it hard.
And I am so impressed with the Vegas fan base.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, I think, firstly, to speak to your point of players have finally kind of, like, found themselves, if you look at William Karlsson's stats, he was their number one scorer during the regular season. He had, like, 40-something goals. His previous high from any league since he was, like, 16 is, like, 15.
And that was like a junior league.
Yeah, or something. It's like some junior league in Sweden or whatever.
Yeah.
So if you have 15 goals playing in junior and all of a sudden you come to the NHL, you have like a really, really mediocre time, and then all of a sudden you get picked up by a new team and you score 40, well, are you playing above your expectation or are you just that good of a player?
Or were you picked and put with the right guys?
Exactly.
That they're at your, like, all of the, I feel like every one of their skills is accented by the guy to his left and right. on the Vegas Golden Knights.
I can agree with that.
And that's also the case with Washington, which is why they're in the conference finals. That's the case with Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. That's why they're in the conference finals. And Winnipeg, same thing. Everybody to the left and right is put together, and the chemistry there, and you don't get to the conference finals without that. Like, well, you can be great in the regular season, but you're not getting through the playoffs in a 7-game series against any team if you don't have the right mix. And they
chemistry is huge. That's number one.
I would say it's the most underrated. Even though people talk about it all the time, it's still underrated.
Yeah.
The chemistry and the effectiveness.
It's most important. That's why you have the 8 coaches. You have guys working together. See who's to watch. Everyone says, well, why do you have so many coaches? Well, because different guys see different things. And they come together. Coaches, staff's all about each other, not independently. And that's why we're seeing the top 4 teams right now. Because they all have the same kind of they're under the same kind of umbrella with management and coaches, how they put their squads together and working together, right? The top 2 D-men on Vegas were healthy scratches last year in their teams. One guy from Washington, I forget his name. What's their top D-man? Brain fart. But anyways, he was a healthy scratch 20 games of the year. 20 games. Healthy scratch. He's Vegas' top D-man.
Yeah. Well, the only D-man that Vegas really had that was like a bona fide NHL D-man is Shea Theodore. And he's shown that. He was their best defenseman yesterday when they played.
Or Sunday.
Yesterday.
Oh, wait. Oh, right. Sorry.
It's all good. yesterday. And then for the rest of the playoffs, he's been, if not their best defenseman, their second best defenseman. And he was like a top 4, top 6 on Anaheim. So
all these
they've
guys
just found a way.
Yeah. And they're all professionals, right?
For sure.
And, they, you know,
of course.
When you have, I was talking to one of our friends, his son has, you know, choice of different colleges going D1 this year. He picked Bemidji. And we talked about players where they're going to be picked and go to where they feel the love. You know, if you're feeling the love, as any where we are, and I'm not a tree hugger, but I'm saying
you feel
important.
If you feel appreciated.
Yeah, you're going to produce. You want to be there.
But that's what I'm saying about Vegas.
Yeah, right? Huge.
Every single player on Vegas was chosen on purpose.
Specifically. They were picked up. They're not dumb guys. They knew what they were doing when they put that whole plan together.
And that was evident at the trade deadline.
Yes.
Because how much movement did they do at the trade deadline, right?
Boom. Like they take Picard, right, who is, you know, starting a lot of games in Colorado. They grab him. They don't use him, but they bait him a little bit, and then you get rid of him. Yep. It's just a whole – it's a chess game.
Again, George McPhee. But back to the series, because we talked a lot about the Jets and the Vegas Knights already.
I have one more point with Vegas.
Okay.
And it has to do with the NHL has finally realized that making expansion teams bad is not a road to success. Like, they changed up their strategy to where
you can protect X amount of players.
Exactly. It used to be you could protect even more players. So they started to kind of roll that back a little bit. And, well, Vegas is good. Well, the teams in the past that had these expansion franchises, they've been bad. They've continued to be bad.
Yeah.
And they're still bad. It's like the NHL was in this way of like, they're a new team. They need to be bad. We can't let them be good. And then they have no fan. They have a smaller fan base than they should in those markets. And then all of a sudden Vegas comes in. They're good. Their fan base is one of the biggest in the league for at least this year. Granted, that probably has to do something with them being in the playoffs. But like the NHL has finally realized this is how we market to new areas.
But the newer teams in the league seem to have some of the best fan bases. Like Nashville, Nashville fans massive, are absolutely insane.
Have you guys been to the game? Have you gone to the game in Nashville?
No,
I want to.
It's so good. Like I've been there twice and it's like unbelievable. So much fun. Like we got great fans. Our fans are top, number one.
Absolutely, the Winnipeg fans and anyone in the league will tell you that.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not from Winnipeg. I'm not jumping on the bandwagon. I'm just saying. As an objective point of view, they were 15 years without a team. They got a team back. Yeah. They are not letting go.
Well, I think that's what really helped them is like that kind of drought of we want hockey, but who do we cheer for? And finally, they come back and everyone's just like rabid.
Yeah, and I say that as a guy from Halifax where the best hockey we have is the Halifax Mooseheads, who are amazing. And I had season tickets when I was there.
Their junior team just won. They're going to the Memorial Cup.
Halifax?
Yep.
They just won. They're going to Memorial Cup this week. You know, they just won last night. On another note, where you mentioned about Vegas, they are setting up precedents for the expansion teams, which is great. and showing everybody it can be done if it's done properly.
Yeah.
And well,
it's what the league needed.
Yeah.
Like, the league needed to get away from this idea that teams have to be bad when they first come in. But it's some sort of like
– It seemed like that.
It's some sort of like – initiation process where your franchise is going to be really bad for the first 10 years or whatever. And we talk about how Nashville is good now, but look how long it took them to be good. Yeah. And it wasn't like they come into the league and 2 years later they were good. It was, we have to draft players. We have to draft the Roman Yossis, the Ryan Ellis's, they have to trade for PK Subban. They need to do all of these things. Finally, they're good. And finally, they're a top team in the league. But it took time.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of new fan bases aren't willing to give you, which is time.
Yeah.
Like, if Vegas was bad for the first 5 years, there wouldn't be a Vegas team in, say, 10 years. Because people aren't going to wait around for your team to be good if you've just come into the league. So having teams that start good just helps the NHL.
Oh, and that's what they've made the rules, because we know Seattle's going to be the next expansion team. The rules are identical.
Yeah.
It's going to be the exact same thing for them. So,
if anything, they're going to be even more.
I think they should hire George McPhee, to be honest.
I don't think George McPhee is leaving Vegas anytime soon.
No, they left him there.
To the Tampa stuff that you wanted to talk about, Stamkos, his comments were pretty powerful about, we'll see what kind of team we are now behind the eight ball. We got to see where we're at, right?
Yeah, because that's where you find out what kind of a team you are when you're facing that kind of adversity.
That adversity is all over you, right? They're two down. Yeah. You know, they're going into the barn in Washington. It's going to be a whole different.
And to your earlier point, like, every singular series in this entire playoffs has been fast and wide open, smash, smash, smash. Very, very, very few actual fights.
Yeah, like, they're not.
Everybody wants to put the puck in the net. They're not interested in knocking each other's teeth in.
That's like the new breed of hockey.
Which they're moving away from
the whole, like, we got to be big and strong, like the old school Boston style. It's now, we need to be fast. We need to be able to score. Well, we need to be able to, like, it's not about
Philadelphia,
like,
tried to hang on to that for mouth way too many years, right?
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm counting the fourth line, so I see, you know what? Forget all that fancy stuff. You're still getting players who now are taking advantage of the rules and taking advantage of things that they would never do 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
If there were enforcers.
If there's enforcers.
Absolutely. And, 100% agree.
They're pushing that envelope now. You get face washes by guys that wouldn't even touch you. You got Marchand licking guys' faces that, you know what?
His head would have been off. Don't even get us started on the Marchand thing.
And it's in Tampa, you got guys in Tampa and OV. Like, even OV's getting involved, things he would not be doing, right? I have a great story about when Colton Orr was playing it with New York. And OV, one of the guys get ran by Brashear. Brashear's playing for Washington, right? He runs one of New York's players and hammers him. Colton skates over right to the bench, and right at OV, he says, "Don't come on the ice, you're a dead man." And told him that. And then they get into it because you go after that guy, I'm coming after that guy.
Yeah.
Now, and with the way hockey's gone, I love the fastness. It's quick, it's big, they're strong, they're bigger. But you still got to police your own hockey. You still got to police your own team and respect the fact that, you know what? If you're running my guy, someone's paying.
That's true. But I think there's also been a lot less of running people. Like, it is more face washes and annoying stuff.
Right.
There isn't any of that dangerous. I don't say not any, but there's a lot less of that dangerous stuff. Like the way Scott Stevens used to just. If you go back, like, everybody's like, Scott Stevens is the best hitter in hockey. If you go back, the rules now, like, 90% of his hits are illegal.
Dirty. Yeah. He would be suspended for
multiple games for almost every one of his hits today.
I think that
he ended Eric Lindros' career.
Yeah,
he should have ended Paul Kariya's, too.
Like, when he light him up like a Christmas tree, it was unbelievable.
I think Paul Kariya and the hit from Scott Stevens has a little bit of effect on Nikolaj Ehlers. Because we talk about how Nikolaj Ehlers is kind of being scared to play.
Great point. 100%, I think,
that's
like, I think he's scared to get Scott Stevens. Granted, it wouldn't be from Scott Stevens, but there are players that can still do that kind of thing.
You look at Reeves in the back.
Exactly,
guys are stepping up. You know, when you come across, your head down. You don't have that time and space at this high speed.
Yeah,
and you know, not saying he's scared, just saying, you know what, he's not excelling, and I hope he. I'm not going to say I hope he's hurt, because you don't want to be intimidated by anybody. And if you can't play your own game.
I know what you mean. Problem. You never hope that he's hurt, but you hope that the reason he's playing the way he is because of an injury and not because of a head game.
Right.
Because
once you have that bug in your brain,
you can't shake it.
That's right. It's there for a long time.
Yeah, especially as young as he is. Like,
so I think teams have finally started to figure out Winnipeg's strategy, and that's where it's like stop them at the blue line. Don't let them into our zone as best we can. Because you see games where Winnipeg gets behind, it's hard for them to come back because they have no space. They can't play that fast style of hockey.
Yeah, they can't get up to speed because of the way that Vegas is stopping them at that blue line.
Exactly. And it was the same thing in Nashville. But when Winnipeg gets a lead on teams like Nashville and Vegas, then all of a sudden the floodgates open because they get that little bit of space because Nashville or Vegas or whichever team is thinking, well, now we're behind. We got to score. So we can't play this kind of shut down defensive hockey.
They're leaving open lanes.
Exactly. They're leaving that little bit of space that Winnipeg needs. And then all of a sudden, the floodgates
open. That's where guys like Laine
and Ehlers and those players.
Scheifele.
We haven't even talked about Tanev, the fastest guy in the league.
I know, it's insane.
And he's playing great hockey.
Yeah, yeah.
He's making smart decisions. It was a weird penalty he got there last night. That was a weird one. That happens. But like he's making good decisions. Some of the calls have been weird.
Really weird.
Like the officiating has been very strange.
Yeah, but it's also inconsistent. Fast, right? Mm-hmm. Inconsistent's huge.
It'd be fine if it was like it was strange officiating, but it was the same all the like across the board. That's fine. But it's been like this game they're picking on like, oh, you nudged him, so now it's a trip.
Right.
Like this game,
Well, I think that's just the state of officiating this year. Like you saw in the beginning of the year, it was face offs and trying to make it more fair in the face offs.
Crazy.
Circle. And then it's been the whole year.
Yeah, this year more people have been throwing their face offs than any other year.
Yeah.
The games have been so much longer. I think they've been told after the first 2 months, okay, back off because these are time situations apparently, on TV, right?
I read on a TSN article probably about halfway through the season that it was actually designed by the NHL to teach, quote-unquote, players to be more fair in the faceoff circle, and it was never going to be this constant, smallest infraction, you're gone. It was meant as like a kind of learning opportunity. Like, okay, this is how it's going to be for the future. We're going to kick you out hard for the first 2 months, and we're going to hope that you learn from it and play a little bit more fairly in the faceoff dot, may or may not have worked.
It's funny because like those players coming out of junior that we talked about earlier, like you know, I watched Nikolai Ehlers and Jonathan Drouin and Nathan MacKinnon play in Halifax. The way they take faceoffs in junior, like they're very, very strict about everything, right?
Yeah.
So and as soon as they leave junior, they can't do that because you're not going to win a faceoff if you play it fair.
Right.
So they're trying to get back to like this is how faceoffs are, you know. So it's funny because at that level, you shouldn't have to teach people stuff. You really shouldn't.
The best faceoff guy in Winnipeg history is Randy Gillen. Gillen is a top faceoff man.
Yeah.
Technique guys make thousands of dollars winning faceoffs.
That's his job. Go out there, win the faceoff.
Win the faceoff. Gillen can play more than that, but he's really good at faceoffs.
Speaking of faceoffs, you know, you got Tampa Bay the other night. They didn't even put out their best faceoff guy, and they needed to win the faceoff. Like win the faceoff, and you don't get scored on.
Right.
Right. There's 10 seconds left in the period.
Yeah.
You've already been scored on in the previous game with like 2 seconds left in the period, off of a faceoff. Like. All you have to do, there's 10 seconds left, win the faceoff, everything goes away. They don't put their best guy out.
Right. You know
what? What were they thinking?
Well, I think they go, you know, they're going, if they should have won their stats, right, and doing the breakdown, right, they're always got someone's talking in their ear.
Yeah.
I think they just got caught up. And, you know, before you know it, boom, let's get it done. And they're going with, he's going to win.
They lost the faceoff and pucks in the net. That's twice that Washington has scored.
You can guarantee when they're watching tape. Someone's going to be hearing about that when they're doing the team.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, messed up.
I think the other thing we could maybe talk on with Tampa is Tampa might be the new Washington with expectations. Everybody expected them last year to be one of the best teams in the league, missed the playoffs because, granted, it was Stamkos got injured, Kucherov got injured, Vasilevsky was injured, all these injuries. But is Tampa turning into the new Washington where the expectation is letting them or not letting them kind of get to their full potential in the playoffs?
That's an interesting point. I guess I had never even considered that because it's funny because you know I'm from the East Coast, so I spend a lot of time watching East Coast like Eastern Conference stuff. I'm a Habs fan at heart because I grew up on the East Coast and that's how it was.
Best captain, Mike Keane.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly.
Captain number 12. Bruce.
The man, well played, for sure. But they, But I never pay attention to Tampa. Like, never.
You know what?
They're such an under-the-radar team.
For sure.
We used to go down. We had a place in Florida. We go see the games. You get a ticket for, like, $6. And the beers are more expensive. They were $8 to go watch the game. It's like you spend more money drinking bubblies than you do get in to watch the game.
Well, which I like that strategy. I'd be down for that. Hey, Winnipeg, take notes.
Yeah. Winnipeg doesn't need to bring fans into the arena.
Hey, yeah. Tickets to the game were $20. I'd pay $12 for a beer.
Well, back in the day, we used to, you know, when the first Jets, you used to be able to get the tickets at 7-Eleven, right?
Yeah.
$7. And Domo, you fill up your car, you could buy a ticket for $5. That was back in the day. Now it's
$55 is like a single seat if you get it last minute.
That's the strategy behind trying to bring fans into the arena, because it happens in Phoenix, in Florida, in the NHL, in NBA. It happens for teams like the Timberwolves and like the Grizzlies.
Phoenix had a hot dog. It was free beer night and free hot dog, and they had like 5 brawls in the stands, guys.
Well, I mean, you do what you can to bring fans in. You just hope that it would be from hockey, not from trying to have as many beers as possible.
But you're saying about Washington and Tampa. Stamkos could feel that, the way OV was feeling a little bit, right?
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure there. There's a lot of pressure.
And going back to, like, I never paid attention to Tampa Bay, but you're right. In the last few years, it's been like, oh, Tampa. Like, same as, like, Washington has been the expected, you know?
Well, I think it's finally kind of flopped. It was Washington. Everyone expected them to be, they're going to be really good. They're the best team in the league, blah, 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 whatever, whatever. And then nothing happened. And it just never kind of panned out for them. Now it's Tampa. They have, like, some of the best forwards in the league. Their defensive core is really good. Their goaltender is world class. Well, they showed it for the first 2 rounds of the playoffs, and then they played Washington, who no longer has that expectation.
Yeah, and who's playing like better. You said, they're playing for fun.
Granted, it's Holtby's been 2 games.
Amazing, by the way.
Yeah,
he's been playing on his
unbelievable.
Head.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Right, and then so who's the best player on Washington right now in this playoffs? Is it Ovi?
Who wins the Conn Smythe?
Is it Ovi?
If they win the
Conn Smythe, I'm saying Ovi.
Well, they're going to give it to Ovi.
Obviously. It's either Ovi or Holtby. It's one of the two.
Okay, but okay. So forgetting Holtby,
if Holtby brings them to,
but the like, who's final? The best skater they have? Because for me, Kuznetsov. It's been Kuznetsov.
Yeah,
the whole playoffs, he's been still on fire.
They're not going to give it to Kuznetsov.
No, they're not. Absolutely, they're not.
But he's their
Ovi's
best
been
player.
So long. He's like,
and Ovi's been waiting, and now this is a chance. But and you see it in his eyes, right? You see what's going on, and he's stepping up huge.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, finally.
Yeah.
That's big time.
Yeah, so he's...
For sure.
Yeah, so I would say Kuznetsov's their best player. Ovi, absolutely a presence in every single game. He's bringing it like he can. And I think without Kuznetsov there, he's their best player. But Kuznetsov is on another level.
Yeah. And but who's put him at that level?
I guess who's
pushed him to that level and worked and
been that comes his, back to chemistry, right?
That's right. And push him together, getting the step up to the plate.
Who put the puck on a stick when he got the breakaway and scored?
Exactly. So who's a supporting cast to all these guys, right? And that's what they're building together, and it comes back down to the confidence of together. They got their trains a rolling.
And we talked about too that Pens Caps game where somebody asked us questions. So we had a Q&A episode, and one of the questions was Ovi and Sidney Crosby, neither one of them got a shot on goal in that game. And to Braden's point, like he was saying, it doesn't matter because they're still affecting the game because
Well, there was one goal where TJ Oshie scores from the slot. It was on a one-timer on a pass from, I guess, Backstrom.
From Backstrom,
But you see one of the defensemen cheats over from kind of guarding Oshie. He has to cheat over because he expects the pass to go past Oshie to Ovechkin. So, and then because he cheats over, it leaves the space open for Oshie to score. Right. So without Ovechkin touching the puck, or getting an assist, or getting a goal, or whatever, he's still affecting the play no matter what, where exactly. It is. Because everyone's, oh my God, Ovechkin, we got to guard Ovechkin. Oh my God, Ovechkin. Yes. And then turns out TJ Oshie's a great player. Evgeny Kuznetsov is a great player. And they can also burn you. It's not just Ovechkin.
And they will burn you.
And
they
guys will, exactly. Are threats, right? And
exactly.
You have that talent, and everyone's thinking, where is he? What's going on, right? Mm-hmm. And as a player, you're thinking about, you know, Ovi could put it at any time, and it's opening up space for the other guys.
Exactly.
So, going back to chemistry, normally your top line is like three really, like Winnipeg has Scheifele, Connor, and Wheeler. And the top line in Tampa is Stamkos,
Kucherov,
and
Braden Point.
Right? But no, Braden Point's on the second line. Isn't he?
Either way.
That's a great...
I think he's the second line.
That's a great question. Plouffe does not know that answer.
Yeah, I don't either.
Sorry.
I'm focusing right on Winnipeg. That's all I got.
But to my point, I guess, like it's weird to me that you have Kuznetsov, Ovechkin, and then Tom Wilson on that line. Wilson is like one of these things is not like the other to me, but he's been so effective.
You can even look at it the same way as Winnipeg, though, because like Wheeler and Scheifele, they're clear top line forwards. Kyle Connor, would you consider him a top line forward?
Yes, but the style of...
But when did he become a top line forward? Because it wasn't last year, so it was only this year so far. And they finally found that chemistry between the three of them. So Connor, until this year, has been the revolving door. That right wing spot...
He's been a bubble player.
The right wing spot on the top line of the Winnipeg Jets has been revolving door. For a while, it was Laine. For a while, it was Nikolaj Ehlers. For a while, and now it's Connor.
I like that Ehlers and Laine play on the same line.
I think
they accent each other.
Did you guys have a chance to see Zinger's comments yesterday? His interview with Ron Klein? It was like top on him talking about Connor, like how he went from the East Coast to the A and kept going, sent back down from the NHL, right? And and he was feeling the pain, but he stuck through it, and the Jets gave him the opportunity, and he seized it. It just came up there. And
for sure. He's worked his way up through the roster through the year. He started on the fourth line.
We had more time. I want to keep going because I want to talk about, like, Roslovic.
Yeah.
If that's the case with Connor, when does Roslovic get his chance? When did that door open for him?
Well, he's already got that spot. He's a rookie. He's already playing with top guys, and he's getting that opportunity. The Jets are getting that. Any player, there's not too many guys can walk into that top line or second line, right? You have to start off and earn it, because you're not going to take a spot, out of the respect of the game. Yeah, some guys will switch it. You're not playing. Man, you're sitting. I'm taking the O. And I think he's going to get his opportunity pretty soon. You're going to see it this year when we do some trades, when we move some guys, because we have to move guys.
Yeah, we're going to have to,
And he's going to get his opportunity coming up next year pretty good. I think he just holds on, does what he needs to do as a teammate, and stay positive and ride the wave.
Well, right now he's like the fringe seventh defenseman. Like when there's an injury to the top six, Roslovic is the first person called up. So, to me, it's not about, Roslovic isn't playing in the NHL, because I'd rather him be playing in the AHL and actually playing than being the seventh defenseman sitting in the stands in the NHL.
Well, who's sitting in the stands for the defenseman? Is it Pullman still? Is he a rubble
Pullman,
guy?
Pullman.
But is he playing in the AHL right now?
No, he's here.
He's here.
Up. Like, so we have, you have the Black Aces, right? The guys are just practice guys, right?
Stay yeah.
Here, right. So he's one of them, and we got is Morrow playing?
No.
He's sitting out, right?
Yeah.
So I knew Morrow was a bubble.
Because Enstrom came back.
Right.
Yeah.
He took the spot, and now...
Pushback.
The fringe guys are now on the...
I feel bad for Morrow, though. Sitting. Like, the guy comes up, he does everything he possibly can. He's been a bubble player forever.
Right,
Well, he was a bubble player in Boston, and he's a bubble player in Winnipeg, but...
He's a good player. They're all good players. And you know what? Let's not forget about the paycheck he's getting.
Keeping in that kind of shape is hard when you're not getting ice time.
But you also kind of know your role. It's like you have to understand. Like players have to realize, I get paid to do what the team needs of me, right? So it's like
agreed.
So
but players but keeping that, like, in that shape is hard.
Well, when game, that's what you get paid
gameplay
to do.
Shape is huge, right? You can practice all you want, but being tossed in there, and you look at the minutes, right? 4 to 5 minutes, 6 minutes, it's still pretty tough, no matter what, 7 minutes. But you have to stay, those guys, they're professionals. And sure, it bothers them. Anyone would want to be in the lineup, 100%.
Yeah, but wouldn't you rather be playing, or wouldn't it be better for that player to rotate that bubble a little bit more than they do?
I think
Pullman gets strung along a lot where he... he's not playing in the NHL. He's also not playing in the NHL.
I think,
right? That's a crappy place to be.
That kind of idea is a regular season idea. When you're in the
playoffs,
you play your best players. Until they can't play anymore, you play your best players. So, and at the end of the day, if the Jets win the Cup, I don't think Pullman's going to say, "Well, I won a Cup, but I didn't get to play, so that sucks." It's like, you won a Cup. Period. Like, period. End of story. There's not. Like, if you feel bad that you didn't get to play, then you're not taking it the right way.
That's a good point. And you talk about And Shane Knight, Knight's a friend of mine, and, you know, he's got a Stanley Cup ring, but he's not in the cup.
Yeah, right? That's the one thing
that's like a killer. Like, you know, you're part of the team, but you haven't had enough minutes in the playoff run to get yourself on the cup. Yeah. And guys will say, take my ring. I want to be on the cup. And Boston did everything in their, they could do to the league to get him on the cup, and the league wouldn't do it.
Because if they bend the rule for him, then the cup has to be how much bigger for all the extra names they got to put on there.
And I'll tell you, the coaches know that, and the coaches feel for the players because they have put a lot of time in, and they're part of that whole process, right? Well, and you look at a player, want to get you in, but
yeah, like
how do we get you in? I can't get you in.
Tucker Pullman hasn't played a single minute in the playoffs, has he?
No.
Yeah. So, but he'll get a Stanley Cup ring.
And you know what? He's part of a process where we're only going to get better.
Yeah,
we're not going backwards. Sure.
That's the thing about the Jets. Yeah.
To that point, what does Vegas look like next year after all the UFAs and RFAs and all that crap? What do they look like next year?
The same team.
You think?
I think it's going to be close.
I think it's going to be rough.
Well, a lot of the contracts.
Because all of a sudden, dollar.
But a lot of the contracts that a lot of those dollars are going towards are players, one, that haven't played a game this year. Like, I think they have $20 million wrapped up in six guys, and the total amount of games for those six guys is six, and it's all on one guy. So players like David Clarkson, he hasn't played a game. Like Michael Grabner, he hasn't played a game. Like, and all of those contracts expire this year or next year.
They will be gone. They won't be back.
They're either going to get bought out or their contract expires.
Yeah. So that's $20 million they're going
to
open up
for them to have for the players that they have now, right?
Okay, but is that enough to keep them together, you think?
But it's $20 million plus.
Next year's going to be a whole other look.
They're going to go through the way they put that squad together and the way those guys will look at, break it down, and go over, and I think they're going to be pretty strong again. I don't think they're a one-time deal.
I don't either. Everybody's saying that they're playing above their potential and that they're not going to be able to repeat this next year.
I think they will.
I just don't know what that's going to look like.
There's a lot of guys in the NHL who are like the Vegas players, who are a third line, bumped on the fourth line, who could be in a 1 and 2 line in different roles.
Now, if you're a player that's on the trade bubble anyway, are you saying to your team, like, hey, I'd love to go to Vegas next year? Like, is that something that you want as a player? Because I feel like it would be with the success fun they're having.
I think, you know, you're talking a lot of times players do have a pretty good communication line with management going through. And unless you're a dink or you've done something where they don't want you, they'll take best interest for the team but also for you. And that's why hockey is such a great sport. Because you know what? Some guys have been shit on and moved in different spots. But a lot of times, you know, management will take care of individuals because they've been good to the club. They've been supportive. They've done their work in the community. They're good people. They will find a spot and make sure that they go to the right spot. They'll ask your top three teams, what do you want? Like, give us a list.
Absolutely. But some players have like a no-trade clause, like Paul Stastny, who waived it, who had put, I do not want to play in Winnipeg, in his contract, and waived it because of the success that Winnipeg's having.
And he only waived it because we're winning.
Like, that's what I mean. Now Winnipeg's an attractive place, not to live in, but to play in, right?
But that's only going to last for as long as Winnipeg is good. Like, true. Once it happens where Winnipeg kind of gets over that hump and they're not so good anymore, you're going to lose all that attraction to play in Winnipeg.
With the youth and the development programs that Winnipeg has done and the strength of our AHL team to back up our NHL team, like, that's a lot of years away.
For sure.
And you talk about Winnipeg, and I'm going to rebuttal a little bit, is that, you know, and this was on, I think Grape said some of that, you're in the NHL. Yeah. Right, and that's what Maurice said. Remember, they made a comment. I forget what team was here from one of the warm teams, San Jose, and right, they're complaining about Winnipeg.
Brent Burns and
Playing in the NHL. There are kids who dream to be here.
Yeah,
doesn't matter if you're playing in Thompson or you're playing out east, wherever you're playing. If you're in the NHL, treat it the way you are treated. There's no bad city. Go to the games. Enjoy it. Fans love you. And warmer to cold.
Well, you say that, but I don't think anybody wants to go play in Arizona.
See, but I think that...
Well, they do like walking on their shorts after practice.
That's fair.
I think that's one of, like, if you're a rookie player or in your first couple years, like, you'll play where you play because it's like, I got to the NHL. I don't care where I play. Once you've shown that you're an NHL player and you're a regular NHL player and teams want you, then it starts to be the more, like, almost quote-unquote ego where it's like, well, I know I'm an NHL player, so where do I want to go? Because I'm important, and I can go where I want to. So then it turns into the, okay, well, where's the fine line between a good team and a nice city to live in, right? So is it San Jose? Is it Tampa Bay? Is it L.A.? Like, those are all the teams
all where the warm spots for guys.
The warm spots, but the teams aren't necessarily bad, yeah. Right? Because you don't see people wanting to go to Phoenix. Well, they're warm, but their team is, yeah, for lack of a better term, garbage. So, like...
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's going pretty deep. I think that, you know, my opinion is, I go right back to, you're very fortunate to have a spot, no matter where it is. Even your team is 0-100, you're still getting your meals for free. You're still flying a plane. You still got all your gear for free. You're still signing autographs. Uh-huh. You're still going to the rink playing a sport that every young person wants to be part of. And you know what? Professional or not, buck up and accept it and just get out there. And things will happen for you.
Well, I think a lot of players' counter-argument to that is like I've spent my entire life doing it. Since like the time I was 13, all I did was hockey, right? So they feel like they've almost earned the right to be there.
All they got to do is look at their bi-weekly paycheck and remind them of that. And then go drive down the street and look at where individuals are working construction all their lives or don't have the homes you have, or they've been, a lot of the sad things in life. And then you look at that paycheck, you're getting $500,000 or $300,000 bi-weekly to play a sport, which is top shelf. And it's all about ownership and all that. But you know what? I understand, players understand, I know a lot of them, and we talk about it all the time. We don't talk about it all the time because, you know, they never discuss their money.
Yeah.
But you're pretty fortunate, right?
Yeah. 100%. I agree 100%. Like, you're fortunate to be where you are if you're in the NHL at all. Sure. That said, we're out of time. Like, we're past an hour now.
Well, thank you, boys, for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Willie Plouffe
of the Fourth Line Hockey Show. You can check out his show. Just go to YouTube. The Fourth Line Hockey Show is there. Check it out on Shaw Cable. Is that all the way across the prairies all or across the country?
I got to face the radio. Thanks for having me, boys.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. Well, thanks so much. Awesome. And on behalf of myself and Braden, thanks so much.
Visit BetEase.com. That's BETEAZE.com for all your sports odds, info, and everything else.